It is time to bring in our opera-loving friends who are back with us again this week with the Berkshire Edge on air. And we say good morning, and how was your night at the opera?
Oh, it was wonderful. Wonderful. We saw The Marriage of Figaro and at the Met, and the music is fabulous, but the production was wonderful.
Yeah.
Great singing, great acting, actually. I mean, it's interesting because I remember when I first started to go to opera, the acting was awful and everybody was hugely overweight. But now they are slim and attractive and their voices are beautiful and they are taught to act. And the thing is well choreographed and the set was beautiful. So we had a wonderful time.
So it's the big singer thing is no more?
They're slim and attractive. They used to be all enormously heavy.
I had a friend though who was an opera student. He never cracked the but he would go for his training and there was something to be said for the largeness, but although he was not, I was just always curious about what it was.
Well, they
the volume of voice.
Yeah.
Actually, no, they used to, I mean, I'm not an expert, so I'm, you know, some of your listeners may.
Well, they're listening to you, so they're your listeners.
Yeah, right, I know. But I remember I knew a young woman who was studying opera who was a little bit overweight, who was trying to lose weight, but she said that, you know, the opera singers seem to feel that the huge weight was good for their voice and also was kind of a protection since they were out there alone, you know, that they felt safer somehow with weight. I don't know, you know, that doesn't.
I'm going to go with David's volume of voice, and Marshall's going to ask the first question.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with the fact that I want to get to the interview you guys did with the principal of Monument Mountain High School.
Yeah.
Well, it's a new. She just Marianne Young, who had been a longtime principal of Monument Mountain High School in Great Barrington, which serves the three towns of Stockbridge, West Stockbridge, and Great Barrington, retired, and they hired a woman from Vermont, Amy Rex. That's R-E-X King, you know, she sounds very innovative, so we had did an interview with her, and she has some new ideas, one of them is that will cause a little bit of a stir is that she's eager to renovate the high school, a project that went down several times. In a vote in the district, but she feels that it's an impediment to carrying forward the educational mission of the high school, that they need to upgrade the structure. So we'll see how far she gets with that idea. But she did reveal that there's going to be a committee examining that, so stay tuned.
We've talked about this a lot. You know that we have the different school districts and the school in Great Barrington, Stockbridge, and West Stockbridge are in a school district where Great Barrington is paying the larger share of the school costs, and you know, and the town of Great Barrington voted down an offer from the state for something like $21 million to renovate the high school because we would have to pay. Also, and the school is in terrible shape. It leaks in the winter. It's more than 50 years old. It's not wired for what it should be wired for now.
The other thing that she comes from Vermont, where they have a different kind of different system of measuring student performance. And progress, they do not. She's very funny on this. She said that in Vermont they shifted to proficiency based graduations, so that all students had portfolios rather than relying upon standardized testing. She was quoted as saying that if we are saying that passing the 10th grade MCAS test is a graduation requirement, then why don't we just let them graduate in 10th grade?
You tend to look at some of these education rules across the different states and across the country, and you kind of shake your head. Portfolio-based proficiency is what it used to be at almost every school when I went to school, and I know it's a little more lengthy and a lot more data and stuff like that to do for teachers and individuals and for guidance departments and everything. But that really was the way to isolate each individual student.
Yep. Well, having taught in Vermont, she's bringing a little bit of that more progressive approach to this school district.
And maybe being a new principal, a new voice in the matter, maybe her raising the concerns about the school will be a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what we hope. I mean, and she also says, that another reason why the school is so bad is that the physical plant really gets in the way of teaching because there's no diversity of space. So, or no diversity of spaces so that you can't do different things in the building. So if she continues to be outspoken like this, we're excited that maybe there will be some changes in the education system.
All right.
But it comes at a point, of course, which we've talked about, as a critical reexamination of how the educational structure in the Berkshires is organized, and whether consolidation of the school districts is the way to go, given the decline in the number of students. So, we'll see what happens.
Organization and funding these regional school districts is a problem that goes throughout the entire tri-state region.
Right, exactly. And, and as we were thinking about what we wanted to talk today, of course, we always try to think, how does this apply to people who might be listening to us from Connecticut or from outside of our educational district? And it is...
It applies 100%.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It really
yeah.
does. Well, speaking about applying 100%, you've got an article about the Community Health Programs Family Service Center online right now.
Oh, that's right. Go ahead, Marcy.
This story was very popular. We can tell from our Google Analytics, but the Community Health Program in the Berkshires is a kind of an HMO. I mean, it's people come there for health services, but they also have a family services center, which is trying to provide all kinds of assistance to families who are coping with challenging circumstances, and so this means that they help parents secure the SNAP benefits, which is food stamps. They help them with fuel assistance, subsidized housing. They have a judgment-free zone where help is available to parents who are struggling. A lot of parents are dropping off their kids there in the morning. I mean, it's a very interesting program that we knew nothing about, and I suspect from the number of people who read this that a lot of people knew nothing about it. But I also think that, we love the fact that people comment on our articles and that we often have an interesting exchange of views in our comments that are sometimes more interesting or longer than the articles. And in this one, we had an interesting exchange of views because we had one reader write in to say that, if people can't take care of their children, then they shouldn't be having them. And they shouldn't be relying on the taxpayers to take care of their children. They shouldn't have them at all. And that, of course, as you can imagine, prompted a number of... I mean, first of all, then somebody else wrote in and said, yes, you're right. And then we had a number of other comments, of people saying, first of all, if you think that people shouldn't be having children, then you should be heavily advocating for pregnancy or for teen pregnancy education, and you should be contributing heavily to Planned Parenthood. You know, which the woman didn't, the original writer didn't respond to. But, you know, there you have folks. I mean, there are the two sides of the issue. I mean, you either tell people that the state gives you no safety net, or you say that, you know, the state should be helping people in a variety of ways. And, you know, so it's, you know, I'm hoping that there'll be more comments on this, because it's an interesting debate, and it's what we want, you know, from our readers.
It's a national debate, actually.
It is a national debate, of course. Yeah. Right. So it's a good story. I mean, if people want to read it, of course, it's still there in our news section, in our Life in the Berkshire section.
All right, we'll move on just a little bit here. This next story is pretty interesting, and that is the O. Henry story that you published, which obviously got a lot of good stats.
It got a lot of good stats also.
Well, we on Christmas Day, we had a number of items that we thought were kind of holiday-oriented, and one of them was to reprint the story of O. Henry, The Gift and the Magi, and was illustrated by a local artist, Adam Goodians, and they're just wonderful illustrations. And we had four seasonal poems too, and he illustrated those as well. And they're just quite lovely, and so we're glad to have them. And it was this, our expression of celebration of the holidays. So. Anyway, The Gift of the Magi is a lesson, is another one of those lessons that perhaps some of our national leaders should read, but probably won't.
Well, they'll claim they did.
Right. And we also had a few sweet little holiday winter poems that were illustrated. Did you say that already?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, sorry. My mind wandered.
But it happens to me all the time. Now, this is an interesting, you know, we always like to say that everything national is local in some way. And this next story proves that. The Four Freedoms Coalition, they're preparing for a national possibility that the special counsel might be fired.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they already have a plan for demonstrations if Trump fires Mueller. If it happens before 2 a.m., the demonstrations will be at 5 o'clock that day. If it happens after 2 p.m., the demonstrations will be at noon the following day. But what I found fascinating when I followed the links on the emails that they're sending out is that there's a little map that shows where organizations around the country are planning demonstrations, and it covers almost the whole map except for very big open spaces in some red states where nothing is being planned. But it's really remarkable how organized this is already.
Well, what's interesting about this, and a lot of people don't, I happen to be old enough to have lived through and been a participant and watching in the Watergate process, how long it took to unfold. And the major difference between that era and now, unfortunately, is the social media and the internet.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as clouded before Watergate, but all the signs, if you lived through Watergate, and especially the last couple of weeks when the midnight firings happened and everything, this is very eerily similar, except for the fact that social media and the internet and newspapers and everything, a national newspaper, has been beating the drum about this since day one, since Mueller was appointed. It seems like a long drawn out story, but it's not. It's only been a year now and Watergate before it really hit crescendo was a good two and a half years.
Yeah, but sadly, mentally, everybody is needs new information every 30 seconds. Yeah. So,
and it doesn't happen that way when you have a special counsel like they have now, or even a special prosecutor,
right, or even life,
right? Yeah. Right. Or even life, right? So, I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, I think everybody is waiting with great anticipation to figure out.
But everybody's got, the thing is, while everyone is waiting with great anticipation, they need to get on with their lives.
Yeah, right.
No, we will move on because it's still you're running a series of articles every once in a while that profile the senior members of the Trump administration.
Yes, we this one is this one focuses on Carter Page, who's an advisor to Mr. Trump. And his intimate relationships with the Russians is quite telling. And that's where this, speaking of the special prosecutor here, Carter Page is, is really involved with the Russians. And so we're doing a series that really looks, really does an in-depth look at some of these characters that populate the Trump administration. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. So this is an interesting article. It's a long article, but it's well worth the read.
Yeah.
All right. Now this next article is something that we went through here years ago, absolutely years ago, and that is Spectrum Communications, which took over from Time Warner Cables. You can no longer hook your cable plug directly into your TV, and this is a fight that everybody's going to lose because they're really, and it's only going to get worse with the new FCC chairman.
But
right now this is a fight they're going to lose because all the spectrum, the analog spectrum that was used before, has been sold off, and they have to get off the analog. They have to get off it, and that's why you need a digital converter. Even if you don't have high definition TV, you need a digital converter to receive the signals because they are getting rid of the analog signals.
Right. So no more just plugging the cable into the back of your TV.
No. Nope.
And they're charging, of course, $7 or $8 a month for every box.
Yep.
On every TV.
For a box on every TV.
Yep.
So it gets to be expensive if you have different, TVs hooked up to the cable in your house.
Now, here's what the local cable advisory board, what the local boards can do, and that is what they did down here, negotiate with the company so that initial box, if you don't have high def, there is no charge for it. It's just that when you get to the more expensive boxes, that high definition,
there will be a charge.
And stuff like that, there'll be a charge.
And they'll probably raise the charge on that.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely.
In order to accommodate the free charge.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, but again, it's just important that people understand what the, thinking, what's going on and why it is. Obviously, I only know this stuff because Marshall knows it, right?
Yeah.
Not because I have any particular interest.
Right.
So I would be just a regular person saying, hey, how dare you raise my rates?
Right.
That question obviously always still stands, but because of what's happening, this is why it's happening.
Right.
In other words, the analog.
Well, but they also have a monopoly.
Oh, God, yes.
And so they, people always feel like they're being taken advantage of because there's no competition to offer them a different alternative. So,
does anybody remember the collect calls through different companies when AT&T was broken up? Does anyone remember Encore? Does anyone remember, this is back in the day when there was a payphone, but you'd get your bill and you'd have made a call for $36.
Yeah, but this is something that that's only going to get worse. And high definition television antennas are great if you live in an area that isn't like we live in, which has mountains.
Right.
You have limited. You have no other option other than cable if you want anything in our area. Plain and simple.
Well, you can. What I'm wondering is what the charge is for, say, someone who does it, who merely streams material but doesn't use a cable, except for its internet capability. You know,
here's what they're going to do down here, and they hide it that way. They up here, they'll probably do it the same way. If you just get internet service. Let's just say you're the basic internet service is, I'll make up a figure, $49 a month. They'll say if you add the TV to it, they'll bring it down to like $45 a month. Everything's all hidden.
Right.
They're prepared for this.
They are. I know.
They're so prepared for this. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But now people don't need to have those cable channels. I mean, they can get everything on the internet if they search for it.
Absolutely.
Just about everything.
That's,
you know?
Absolutely. And that's why the cable companies are doing what they're doing, because they want to get it on the front end, not the back end.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. You just hit the bell. Ding, 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 ding. If we're
on
TV,
right.
Game show. Well, we have 3 minutes left.
3 minutes. So, we had a terrific article by a woman who writes for us regularly named Irina Firstman, who is she's a kind of nutrition life coach, where she helps people, you know, become more productive and more effective and happier and by talking to them about what they eat. And she wrote a terrific article about how to eat over the holidays and not make yourself sick, which is what we're all doing, you know, not to keep yourself healthy and gain weight by eating the right things over the holidays. So again, we can't go into all the details now, but you can read it on the Edge, and it's very worthwhile. Of course, I'm not doing any of it, but it's still very worthwhile.
I don't think any of us do any of it.
Oh, no. Then we all go on diets in January and are not able to lose the weight we've gained. So it piles up year after year.
People should do what professional weightlifters do. You know, professional weightlifters have a day or two a week where they go off their regimen.
Yeah.
And they have things that they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other day, but of course, then they're back in doing for the other 5 days a week, they're doing their training. That's the part that us normal people can't get into.
Well, I think the other problem is that no one has the moderation bone has been broken. So either have to have one lemon pip and, you know, two sips of water. Or, splash out.
Before we go, because we have a minute left, before we go, I want to get back to the Spectrum story for you folks. And it ties in very heavily for your readers and for our listeners with the what has happened recently with the FCC and the Internet. The Internet now will be, your speeds will be controlled and everything else will be controlled on top of it. This is how the companies working hand in hand with the government, which should be wrong, are going to deal with the fact what you just said, David, where you can go and you can get Hulu, you can get Amazon, you can do all that and just use their service to pipe it through.
So you're gonna
end up paying more, because they're gonna slow you down, you're gonna have to pay more. It's all gonna be done in the front load. Net neutrality is the biggest disaster, and it is allowing the companies to do what they're doing.
And, you know, we worry about it for the Edge. I mean, rely on fast and free internet for people to receive us.
When did we start paying more, Marshall?
We started paying more about a year ago, a year and a half ago. When we pay at the TV station in here and at my house, because we pay close to about $180 a month just for the internet service to give us super high speed. That's going to happen to everybody sooner or later.
That's just part of, you know, again, people, nobody, I've yet to encounter a monopoly that does something for free. How about that?
No, of course not.
Yeah. So
right.
And recourse, no.
So people should start gearing together, and in the new year, if you want the internet to go back to where it was, really fight this net neutrality decision by the FCC.
And how do you do that?
You go to your congressperson, you go to your Senate, and if they don't get what you want, you get other people in there that will. Yes, yeah. They can pass laws. They can control the FCC.
So they can. Yeah. Well, we saw the movie The Post the other night. Yes. You know, the movie about the decision on the part of the Washington Post to run the Pentagon Papers. And the judge, you know, who ruled in favor of the Washington Post and the New York Times, said the courts are supposed to protect the governed, not the governors. So on that note,
Citizens United.
On that note, that ends another edition of the Berkshire Edge on Air.
Well,
another
year. So we'll see you next year.
Absolutely
exactly right.
See you on the radio
next year.
Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Well,
you
too. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to all our listeners.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is This Week in the Berkshire Edge on Air here on Robinhood Radio. And you can also, once again, go to theberkshireedge.com, or you can listen to this show again on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on the Berkshire Edge on Air.